Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Wine Time with Peggy show, featuring Peggy Fiandaca, who along with her winemaker husband, Kurt Lawrence Dunham, owns and operates LDV Winery in Arizona. Hey, everybody, welcome. Today's Big Blend Radio Wine Time with Peggy show is a special episode. We are celebrating Arizona Wine Month. And as you know, Peggy and her husband, Kurt's winery is in Southeast Arizona, and their tasting room is up in Scottsdale. And it is also Women's History Month. In fact, we are also looking at, you know, March 8th is Women's Day, International Day. And so we're going to be talking about women in the wine industry. And Peggy's got some friends joining us on the show, special friends, two women also in the wine industry. And this episode is not only going to be on Peggy's podcast channel and Big Blend Radio with us, but it's also going to be, as usual, on our Eat, Drink, Be Merry show, but also our brand new Women Making History podcast channel. So we're excited about this because let's celebrate wine. Let's celebrate women. Let's celebrate Wednesday. It sounds good to me. So welcome back, Peggy. How are you?
I'm terrific. Glad to be here. And what a fun episode to celebrate women and also the Arizona wine industry.
Exactly. Exactly. How many wineries are in Arizona, do you think?
You know, the number is not exact, but it's well over, I think, 100 licenses that are currently in the state of Arizona. And I think I've said in the past, we were license number 17. You know, we've been around almost 17 years. And so that's a tremendous amount of growth over the last 17 years that we've seen. So it's exciting.
When they gave you the license, did they give you a purple stamp with Syrah or like...
No, they were just anxious to get our taxes. So they wanted us up and running so they can get their sales tax and, everything from us.
That's right. Well, you've got two friends joining you. We've got Katie Spencer. Katie is the owner of Twisted Union Winery. You can go to twistedunionwinecompany.com. Welcome, Katie. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's good to have you on the show. So how long have you had the winery?
We acquired the property about 3.5 years ago. So we acquired an existing vineyard and winery, but started making wine maybe about a year prior to that. So about 4.5, 5 years in the industry.
And what got you into the wine industry?
My parents.
Is this real? Oh, wait a minute. Am I right that you were like me as a teenager and before teenagers sneaking into mommy and daddy's cabinet?
A little bit of that. Yes. Yeah. My parents introduced us to wine when we were pretty young. And I actually can remember my dad having the Wine Spectator magazine out on the kitchen counter, and he would circle things that he wanted to buy and track down, and he would dog ear the pages. So I can remember that from early days growing up in California, that it was part of our family culture.
Yeah. Ours too. I grew up in South Africa, and it was like if you could go to a restaurant and if your parents were there, you would have wine at the table. Not as much as them, but then I learned to refill my mom's wine glass for her. And, you know, I had to taste.
Yep. Yes, all sorts of tricks like that.
Yeah,
yes.
All kinds of fun like that. Okay, so I love that. I mean, it is a family thing. It's about everyone being together and having a good time with wine and food. But our next guest is Brooke Lowry-Ide. She is a 100% woman-owned business and winemaker of Vino Stash. You can go to vinostash.com. Welcome, Brooke. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you, Lisa. It's nice to see you, ladies.
Yeah, you too. You too. So what led you into the wine world?
I, too, was influenced by my parents' love of wine and European culture, and decided to quit my corporate America job and go back to school to get my degree in viticulture and enology at the Southwest Wine Center, and just kind of trickled from there. I never thought that I'd own my own winery, but here we are today.
Right on. And am I right that you come from Phoenix, Arizona? Like, you're probably the only person I know that actually was born. Well, no, I know a few. Maybe like 10 people that were born and raised in Arizona.
Yeah, my parents moved here when I was about 6 months old. So I was born in New Mexico, but definitely a native, raised in North Central Phoenix and Paradise Valley. And I now live in Scottsdale, and the winery is down in Sonoyta.
Okay, right on, Sonoyta. And where's your winery, Katie?
We're in Sonoyta as well. I think okay. Brooke and I, our wineries are maybe a mile and a half apart.
Okay.
That's the crow-wise.
Where's, do you have a, you've got a tasting room where people can come into your winery, Katie?
Yes, we do. Our tasting room is on site at the vineyard, along with our Airbnb and Harvest Host space and everything, all
oh,
on
smart.
One property.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what about you, Brooke? Do people come see you by appointment or are you open?
We're by appointment and just recently opened up on Saturdays. So
cool.
We have two lovely ladies that work down at the winery on Saturdays and but by appointment other days.
Okay, that makes sense. And then Peggy, your winery, LDV Winery, you can go to the vineyard and I just want to say you're Chiricahua Mountains, but are you kind of technically Wilcox?
No, we're not in the Wilcox AVA. We're still 45 minutes from, almost an hour from Wilcox. So we're pretty remote. We're in the foothills of the Chiricahua Mountains.
Mm, it's beautiful out there. Now, you also do Harvest Host, so people and special events. And do you open it up by appointment too?
If we're there, we're not always at the vineyard, but if we're there, absolutely, we invite guests in. And we are by appointment, and we do special events, and our wine club members come visit us quite often. So it's pretty active, but we wouldn't have regular hours because we'd sit there by ourselves. We're that remote. And until it builds up around us, I don't think we'll ever have a tasting room that has regular hours.
I don't want it to build up around you.
I know.
It's pretty out there. It's pretty out there. So Peggy, I have to ask, was wine a family thing for you too? I know that you and Kurt have traveled and got into wine and, you know, wine tasting around Europe and everything, but I want to know about you as a little girl. Did you sneak wine too?
Well, I'm Italian, you know, of course. Wine is at every table. Is it the best of wine? No, not so good, but at least in my standards today. But yes, we always had wine at every meal at the table, and we were able to sip it and have it at a very young age, just at home.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the type of wines and the varietals that you are all producing. So Peggy, she's got one of the best Petite Syrahs on the planet.
We are known for our Petite Syrah. And like we've talked about in the past, we specialize in Rhone varietals, and we only grow four grapes varieties. We only grow Viognier, Grenache, Petite Syrah, and Syrah. That keeps us busy, and we're able to do a lot of different versions of different kinds of wine. And we are single varietal specialists, so we don't do a lot of blends. I think we only have about one blend on the marketplace at a time. Otherwise, our wines are, pretty straightforward, a celebration of the vintage. We're not trying to create a wine that is the same year after year. So, yeah.
Well, the blend is reserved for us at Big Blend Radio, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Brooke, tell us about your wines.
Yeah, we're a small, about 1,000 case production facility. It started out with just some fruit contracts that through other winemakers, actually, that had overage and kind of threw me a bone in the form of tonnage and fruit. And then that morphed into development where more long-term arrangements were made with a couple of vineyards. And this past year, we had our biggest production and worked with five different vineyards. So really, it just depends on the fruit that I get access to. That's how I decide which wines I'm going to make. Mostly reds. I've played with some rosés. I agree with Peggy in that I think Arizona should really celebrate vintage variation because of the monsoon pressure that we have. It varies from year to year. And this past year was really dry, which yielded a nice crop with minimal rot. We also had a couple of vineyards that had a bumper crop year, which threw off some more clusters on the vines. So this past year was great. The winery's at max capacity. I like to play with single varietal wines as well, but I made a field blend a couple years ago with Malvasia, Vernac, Malbec, and Tannat, and fermented it all together, and it's super pretty in bottle. So I think I would play with some more things like that. I think it just depends on how kind Mother Nature is to us and what, from a creative standpoint, I want to do as a winemaker.
Katie, what about your wine?
We are in the process of two things. We're actually restoring, replanting the vineyard on the property we purchased. And in the meantime, we're a lot like Brooke. We are buying our grapes from anywhere from about 5 to 7 vineyards. So we're always trying to source certain varietals because we've got a couple of signature blends that we do. And then we're always looking to see where we can get the tonnage to have a selection of single varietals as well. So we do have our Super Tuscan, for example, and as Peggy said, you know, trying to recreate that flavor profile each year, we lean towards that, celebrating the vintage variation. So our Super Tuscan is always Sangiovese Cab Franc based. And then we will look for another big red to give it some additional complexity. So that big red has been Petite Sirah 1 year, Cabernet Sauvignon 1 year, Tannat on another vintage. So we're striving to keep it in a flavor family, but not recreate an identical flavor year over year. And it's been fun. It's been a challenge for us to see which flavors are going to complement best with that trio that we use for the Super Tuscan. We have a signature white that we do too. That's a Malvasia Vignier, and we're pouring it back to back in the tasting room right now so that people can really appreciate.
Okay. I'm coming over.
Well, they can appreciate how much different the 21 is from the 22, even though it's still the same grape varietals and only slightly different percentage of the blend. And yet they could not be more different. So it's I think, fun to be able to share with our guests as well, that all those variations that we get in Arizona.
That's exciting because you're also talking about varietals you don't always hear about. I think that's a cool thing about Arizona. And Peggy, I wanted to go to, you know, the actual community of Southeast Arizona wineries, right? I know we've touched on this before, but since you've got, you know, two friends on here also making wine in the world, you know, women in the world of wine, which we're seeing more and more. I think we're getting better in the industry. Wouldn't you all kind of agree that over the last 10, 15 years, we're seeing more women? Sometimes they were always there, but in the back in the barrels or something. I don't know. There was a lady that went down Niagara Falls in a barrel, and I don't know if she had Peggy's wine for us, but I don't think you were open then yet.
Probably not.
But Peggy, what about everyone working together, not just as women, but also as winemakers working together? Does that happen a lot?
Absolutely. It's a small industry in Arizona still, and we're all pioneers, basically trying to find what works best in our Arizona climate and in our regions. And so, you know, we share information, we share issues, you know, because I've mentioned before, we've had some things happen in our vineyard that people have never seen before. And so sharing that information amongst each other helped us find solutions. Of course, we have a really wonderful university system that provides technical support to the industry doing research for us. And we all know each other. We all we have the Arizona Wine Growers Association, which is our statewide organization that most everyone belongs to. And So I think we share information. I know when Katie was starting up and thinking about going into the industry, I told her, no, don't do it. But she did it anyways. And you know, provided her some advice early on, and you know, we pay it forward and share that kind of support of each other. And it's fun to see, you know, I think, quite honestly, I think women make great winemakers. We have a better sense of smell than men do. And, you know, I think that's an important task. It's really understanding the nuances of the wine. And so I'm excited to see more women getting involved in the forefront, not just in the marketing end or not just in the behind the scenes.
Yeah, Brooke, as a winemaker and 100% owned that female owned winery, any tips or comments in regards to the world of women in wine, getting in there, getting started? Any tips out there for ladies listening and going, you know, I love wine so much. I've always wanted to add a winery. It does sound romantic, but I think that's why you got that comment from Peggy Katie. It sounds romantic and awesome, but we all know, it's physical labor too, right, Brooke?
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of manual labor, especially, you know, we built our winery on a bootstrap budget, and I do have a forklift, but I hand bucket everything into our destemmer and into our press. So the wear and tear on your body is real. You can mitigate that a little bit with some better equipment, but I also feel like it's so daunting to take on something like this, like incrementally grow as you can, or else the financial component can be really substantial. One thing I really enjoyed about my experience at the Southwest Wine Center was that we had to do a business plan. And so I got to go online and find where I can find used equipment. And then to Peggy's point, we're a pretty close-knit community. Todd and Kelly Bostock with Dos Cabezas sold me a bunch of used equipment. Same with Kent Callaghan. I got his press from the 70s. They've been very generous with me starting out and always taking my phone call in the middle of harvest when I'm frantic about something. We have a great community of people. And I think as women, we're naturally more social and more willing to reach out and help one another. I know that Katie brought over a new young winemaker by the name of Jenny, who also did the Southwest Wine Center's program and is building a winery and vineyard down in Sonoyta. And like, I couldn't wait to help give her any knowledge that I have about what we're doing here. If we all collaborate together, we can really put well, Arizona's on the map as a wine region, but really educate the public, especially Phoenicians, that we do grow wine here in Arizona and not just in the Verde Valley, but down in southern Arizona. I mean, I'm from Arizona and I had never been to Sonoyta before I started studying where grapes grew. And southern Arizona is a very, very special place in our state. It's breathtakingly beautiful. So,
Yeah, and biodiverse. I love Southern Arizona, Southeast Arizona. I mean, just even the hummingbirds, and you've got bear, you've got pronghorn. Don't get me started. I really love that area. It's one of my favorite. I mean, we travel full time across the country, but that area to me is like there's so much history. There's, I don't know, just a diversity of culture. And dude, everyone, you need to go and just hang out for like a month, you know, because it's never done and you've got five seasons, right? So doesn't that influence too? And where you guys are, you're kind of where the Sonoran Desert butts up to the Chiricahuan Desert, like the am I getting this right? The Chiricahua Mountains and everything, and then you're kind of hitting into New Mexico too, and then you got the Mexico border, which people freak out about, but like I go hiking out there all the time, so like when I'm there, so it's cool. So, Katie, do you want to jump in here as a woman winery owner?
well, and I'm going to echo what Peggy and Brooke have said as well. When I started putting together our business plan to acquire this property, I talked to several mentors, and that includes Peggy, that includes Anne Roncone at Lightning Ridge, Carol Wilhelm from Wilhelm Family Vineyards too. And here in Sonoyta, we benefit from the fact that there are the, I think, 18, 19 wineries. There are, I believe, seven women winemakers just in this immediate area. And it is very collaborative. So I appreciate the support that we've received. I appreciate the encouragement, the advice. It's all factored in, and it's really helped us shape our plans. And in fact, for example, when we were looking to purchase this property, the owners had a second vineyard in Wilcox, and that was part of the package. We actually negotiated that out of the package because we recognized it was too much for us to bite off at once. So to Brooke's point, growing incrementally, we knew we were taking on an awful lot with what we had, and we couldn't divide our time. And I think really we got that advice from a couple of the people here. They're just like, how much acreage do you really want to take care of to start? Right. So it's helpful. It's insightful. And we lean on each other every now and then. So I'm grateful that we have such a wonderful network.
And also with you doing the Airbnb and Harvest Host, you're bringing in the tourism component. So do you find that being in the tourism component, I want to go to Peggy as well on this, that you are educating people about Arizona wine? Are you seeing like, oh my God, I didn't know this happens here?
Yeah, we hear that a lot. People still think they, you know, if they're going to enjoy Arizona wines, that they have to go to Verde Valley. There are wonderful wines there, but you have a whole other level of experience when you come to Sonoyta or to Wilcox or out to the Chiricahuas, where, as you mentioned too, there's so much natural beauty, but we have unique offerings where we've got varietals that you might not be familiar with. You might get an opportunity to try something completely new and take it home and be very excited. And then you become an advocate for us too. So I'm always happy to be able to share that with our guests.
Mm. Are you finding that, Brooke, now that you're open on Saturdays and by appointment, that it's an educational experience for people tasting your wine?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, most of my friends are still like, what are you doing in Mexico making wine? And I'm like, first of all, it's not Mexico. It's
See,
beautiful.
That's what
border
I was saying.
Land.
People like, yeah, yeah.
but yeah, no, I think, you know, Phoenix is a population of 4 million people, 4 million plus, and many of them are not from here, as you mentioned, right? And they don't know that we have, that we grow wine here and have for a long time. I mean, since the 70s, but we had vineyards here in the 1600s, just prohibition killed our industry. So the educational component to the people who want to take weekend trips in Phoenix is crucial. It's really important for not only bringing economic growth to those rural regions, but also to, you know, help support our little small businesses. It's necessary. I think that we could focus more on educating the public here in Phoenix. But I think we're doing a good job having events and festivals where people come out and they get exposed to Arizona wine and they enjoy it. And then they'll take those trips down to go visit the vineyards and the wineries.
I want to touch on Tucson being your backyard too. Tucson is really important being a gastronomy capital, UNESCO, that's a world landmark for food. And so that relationship, I mean, that's I think over a million people, it doesn't feel like it, but it's over a million people living there and visiting. Then, you know, the tourism is huge there. So that part with that recent designation, I think it's what, 2-3 years? I don't know.
About 3 years ago.
3 years ago is such a good balance for the area as well. And Peggy, you've got the tasting room in Scottsdale, which is, you're such a smart girl. She's like, nope, I'm getting people there, sending them down, especially because you're not, you know, open daily or, you know, with the winery itself, because you are remote. That was an important factor for you, right? To have a place.
Right. We had to figure out how to sell wine. We are making a lot of wine and it kept coming.
You should have just called me.
And I know it kept coming year after year and we couldn't drink it all. So we had to find a place that we could move a lot of wine, and Old Town Scottsdale serves to do that for us. You know, our tasting room in Old Town, we serve as like a mini chamber of commerce for the state of Arizona wine industry, because people come from all over the world, and I host a lot of media that come from all over the world at the tasting room. And it's their first introduction many times to Arizona's wine industry. And so we talk about the different wine regions. We encourage day trips. I have a little day planner for people if they wanted to go they have 2 days or 1 day, what would they do to go visit wine regions around the state? So we're their first contact. And a lot of the time I get all the calls for our Scottsdale wine trail. So I'm talking to people that are planning their trip to Arizona and they're asking me questions. A lot of times they call me and say, so can we walk through the vineyards in Scottsdale? And so they have no clue to basically any one, they have no clue about wine or vineyards first. And then they have no clue about Arizona and the diversity of Arizona or where wine would grow and what about the wine region. So my staff is very educated about not just our wines, but the Arizona wine industry and the state of Arizona so that they can help people understand a little bit better about the state.
Now, aren't you all part of one organization that represents women in food and wine? I'm not pronouncing it. You can. I always mess it up.
Well, Brooke and I are both DOMs with a DOM. Jesus.
DOM de Escoffier.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Brooke.
So that's a good organization that really that supports the small business woman too, right?
Well, it's an international organization, and what I like about it's I belong to another women's organization that is a networking organization. But what I like about Les Dames is that it is a support young people, young women entering into the food industry or in the wine industry and so on. And it's a charitable organization. So we raise money for that. But it's an international organization. And come this fall, we're hosting the conference in Arizona. And so Brooke is participating on a half day session that is focused on Arizona wine. So we're pretty excited about that, introducing the state's wine industry to a lot of women from around the world.
I love this. I love this. So speaking of women, let's talk about some of your inspirations. And then we want to talk about some more wine terms. And Peggy always teaches us wine terms. And half of the time, I can't pronounce those either. But we have some fun with that. And we'll talk about that and then talk about some food and wine pairings, because that's always fun. But women that inspire you, let's start with you, Katie. Who inspires you?
Truly, I take a lot of inspiration from my family. So my mom was certainly a big inspiration for me. And I think that, you know, there's this joke in my family where my mom said, or my dad said to my mom that, I know you wanted all your kids to be independent, but don't you think you took it a little too far with Katie? And I've always marched to that beat that after 30 plus years of working in the marketing and public relations industry, I basically walked away from corporate life and reinvented myself here. And I've seen other women do that too. Anne Roncone, for example, you know, her background's in engineering, and yet in the Bay Area, she talked her way into working in different wineries and doing cellar work. And I just loved that initiative that she saw something she wanted to do and went after it. So those are probably, and certainly the ladies on this podcast too. I see a lot of great things. I've learned as much about winemaking from Brooke as I have from probably half a dozen other winemakers combined. So I really appreciate having these resources that so close to us too. You know, I've had other mentors along the way too. I've always been impressed with women who are willing to go into politics, because it's not something I would do.
Well, hey, Sandra Day O'Connor comes from your state. Mm-hmm. You know?
She does, and she's been in the tasting room before.
Yeah, yes. And that was going to be my person that I have always admired and looked up to, and I've had a chance to meet. I had a chance to meet her after she was retired from serving on the Supreme Court, but she's a gal's gal, you know. She was a true Arizona, even though she wasn't born in Arizona, she was She had that Western spirit that people talk about, and she was hard working, and she wasn't afraid. You know, even though she got out of graduated law school and couldn't find a job, she kept after it, and she worked hard to be recognized, and you know, studied hard. And when she was on the Supreme Court, I think what she was a true politician that worked to really find a solution, a compromise or a solution, but really worked hard to promote the constitutionality of ish on issues. And you know, on the right to abortion was something that is very important to me, and a woman's right to choose. And I think she worked hard to find a solution when she served on that on the board. You know, one thing I didn't know about her, and I learned this later, is she was really dedicated to civics training, and she actually created an online platform that is still used today by 50 million kids that to learn about civics.
Oh my gosh, it's so needed.
Absolutely, it's needed. And so it's a gaming platform to learn about civics, and she was really dedicated to that. So she's been someone I've really admired, her tenacity and her hard work.
I met her brother, Nancy and I met her brother. In fact, he's been on our podcast a few times. He's a
Awesome.
writer, and you know, he wrote about their ranch and her life, growing
The
up on their
Lazy
ranch.
Bee.
And yep,
The
that's
Lazy
it.
Bee and Duncan.
That's how we first met him. And then he wrote a book with our friend Lynn, Reese Sneed, and she's a book publicist. You probably all know each other. And they wrote books, regarding wild horses, and that's how we got to know them.
Oh,
So,
awesome.
yeah, standing up for the wild horses and taking care of them so they don't all, you know, disappear. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast. I won't start because I won't finish. No, save the wild horses. They're federally protected by a lady named Velma in 1974, and they're not being protected like they should. So, anyway, I won't go into that. So, Brooke, who inspires you?
I'm going to go with Katie too. My mother, I was raised by a single mother who was very successful in commercial real estate here in the late 80s and 90s, which is also another kind of male-dominated industry. And
Very much so.
she worked really hard to provide for me. And that was a great model growing up, was to see her. You know, my parents divorced when I was two, and she didn't remarry my stepdad until I was 13. So it was just us for, you know, the majority of my childhood. And that work ethic, that and being an athlete, I was an athlete in college, and learning how to show up and perform on a daily basis. I think that discipline is necessary in this industry as well, especially being an entrepreneur and, you know, owning your own business, showing up and working hard every day. That ethic was instilled when I was young. And, you know, I'm married to an entrepreneur. He gave me the confidence to go out and do this. He was like, "You're going to show up and work hard every day, you know, bet on yourself." And so supporting me in that journey too.
Oh, I
And
love that. I
our
love that you and competitiveness through sports teaches you how to make mistakes and it's okay to lose. You
For
know?
sure. And that's, if that's one thing that defines winemaking and this whole journey, is making mistakes, feeling the pain of those mistakes, and then moving on from it.
Hey, listen, that's why we have different four-lettered words in wine, okay? And we're allowed to have chocolate afterwards too. You know, that's a saying. Dark chocolate is good for us. Going into the three of you, each come from a different background that has, you know, brought skills in, like you know, to what you do now. And I want to touch on like one skill you think you brought from your previous career and touch on the fact that we're allowed to have more than one career in our lives. So let's start with you, Katie. You come from this, you know, corporate background, marketing, PR. that's obviously going to help you in what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it is a case, though, of sometimes the cobbler's children have no shoes, where I don't get to everything that I could do for our marketing. Right. But it does give us, I think, an extra maybe panache or polish to our brand. And some of our partners that we bring in to have that expertise as well. So it's nice to have that resource within our group. And I think truly the one of the skills that I bring from that background that's probably I use the most is the simple organizational skills of being able to be a multitasker. There is no typical day in this industry. I can start out with a plan of 9 things. Like I'm looking out the window at the vineyard right now and looking at some of my irrigation lines that I need to go clip up. I'll probably do that this afternoon instead of some of the other tasks that I should have been doing. But just being able to have that ability to organize and adapt, it changes all the time. So making sure, though, that things don't get dropped, that if I don't get to a task today, I get to it tomorrow. So I truly, you have to be organized. You have to be, and I don't want to say structured. That's not quite it, but you just have to be able to move and change and keep it all going and keep it all going forward. Although Kelly Bostock gave me a really fabulous piece of advice early on. And she did tell me there's always more to do in a day. So just go to bed at the end of the day. Just go to sleep.
That's really true. Sometimes I just do that. And then I'm like, I wake up in the morning and go, I didn't drink my wine. What's wrong? No, that's never happened. I want to go to you, Peggy, because you've come from a background also in, you know, planning communities and cities, strategic planning. So that's got to have helped you with the winery on all levels.
Absolutely. I mean, my strategic planning background and community planning background the community planning helped me lay out our vineyard and to set up the you know, do all the research that's needed to lay the foundation for an incredible vineyard. You know, the water, the infrastructure, where do we lay out the vineyard in association with the terroir of the Chiricahua Mountains and so on. So my planning background helped with that. My strategic planning background really continues to help me grow this business, starting from nothing. We started from raw land, and we decided from the beginning that we would be 100% estate vineyard and to, you know, have control of every step of the process. And so developing that business plan and then using my strategic skills to grow that business has helped. You know, we not only grow the grapes, we have a full winery that manufactures basically the wine. We have a distribution system all the way to our retail and at the tasting room. So, you know, growing that and focusing on that, I serve as the general manager for the entire operation. So,
don't mess with Peggy.
No, don't mess. I have my fingers in every single pot. You know, even Kurt has to, you know, nod his head a lot of times to me. So even though he controls the winemaking end of it. And also, you know, being a small business person in the past, we have a lot of staff. So overseeing our great staff and keeping them happy and keeping them focused on brand is I think, a skill I've built through the years.
And you have a sense of humor. I think you have to have a sense of humor for this, because you gotta have a sense of humor for any kind of business that you're going into. If you don't have a sense of humor, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be miserable. So, Brooke, for you, going from your past corporate life into now, like, you know, how has that helped you? What are some of the skills that you've been able to bring through?
I feel like every job I've had, I take a little piece of it and contribute it to the next job and pivot, right? Like I was also in corporate marketing, but I also think like the manual labor component and being an athlete, I got to pivot from.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I had an internship with the New Times and learned marketing there and how to plan events. And then, you know, worked in hospitality and learned that side of wine. I mean, wine's a very, the production side's pretty blue collar, but you've got the white collar side of it where you're presenting your product in a yeah. informal environments and need to speak to that. So I think, you know, I to Katie's point also, like we can have different careers. It's okay to invest in yourself and say, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to take all the knowledge that I've had, good and bad, and I'm going to mm-hmm. parlay it into something that I'm passionate about or a different career path. So I think, you know, all of life's lessons and experiences lend themselves to what you do as you mature.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. What is your wine term?
I'm sorry?
Your wine term. We have a wine term of the month. Do you have a wine term for us to learn? Because we have to learn about wine.
How about racking? Have you guys talked about racking at all?
We have a little bit, yes.
Yeah, I just finished that. So that's why I'm alluding
okay.
to that.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I think you know, because we got new listeners all the time. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, well, each winemaker is very different. I know winemakers who don't rack at all. I choose to rack my previous vintage wines once before bottling, but I only rack once. And that's the process of taking the wine out of barrel, cleaning the bottom of the barrel of the lees and the fruit solids that gravity has pulled down into the base of the barrel. That's just the method that I learned. I know some winemakers choose not to rack. They think that it can lead to reductive elements in the wines, but I prefer to go barrel by barrel, smell, taste, and clean them up via racking. So
All right.
I finished that.
Right on. Well, here's it. Cheers to you on finishing your racking for is it for the vintage, right? For this last year then.
Yeah.
Katie,
actually rack also, but we do a lot of racking. So we rack our wines because we don't fine them or filter them. And so we use racking to do that for us. So we do that pretty much every 60 days throughout the entire aging process. So we do it a lot, probably more than anyone else.
Wow.
Do you blanket with any argon or nitrogen?
We do a little bit, but not a lot. Yep.
Cool.
And we haven't had any problems.
Oh, no. And you have the bitsies in your wine.
We will have
bitsies.
Sediment. Yeah. The bitsies. Yeah.
I know. Sorry. I'm always going to call it bitsies. Katie, do you rack your wine?
We do as well. So we at least once with our reds, usually, and we're gearing up to do that. So I think that's the timing of this particular podcast too, is I think racking is top of mind. So we're getting ready to rack, and we're also working on blends for our 22 vintages. So there's a lot of heavy duty cellaring work going on, where little bitty Jenny and I are moving barrels around on pallet jacks. So yeah, that's where you got to throw the muscle into it too. My wine term is structure. Cause again, we're working on blending. And structure is all of those things. It's the alcohol, it's the acidity, it's the tannins. You know, are your tannins rounder? How much of that kind of structure of the tannic structure is hitting the back of your palate? Is it sweet or is it dry? You know, I always make sure that when customers come in, that's one of the first things I tell them is our wines are bone dry. Because we do ferment down all the way to zero or negative. It's the body, it's the finish, all of that, the complexity. Are there lots of layers of flavors in the wines? All of that is the structure of it. It's that thing that I love to delve into when we're doing tasting notes on new wines, where what story does it tell? And the structure is it's like a chapters of a book.
Oh, I like that. I like that. The plot thickens. Yes. From racking and rolling to the plot thickening with structure. I like this. So, Peggy, what is your term of the month?
My term is finish. You know, the finish of the wine, and I'm talking about as you're tasting the wine, how that wine finishes in your mouth. And we work hard in our winemaking style to ensure that finish of that taste in your mouth is soft, and that it is not harsh. You don't get, because we make big reds, our Petit Syrah is not a shy wine at all, but I don't want those tannins to blow your head off. And we work hard through the winemaking and we do 3 year aging on most of our red wines, and that softens that finish. So the term that's most important to us is plush. And so when you taste our Petit Syrah signature, I'm hoping that it has this plushness in your mouth, but then the finish lingers and you're really experiencing it. And it's one of those wines that you start really thinking about and enjoying long after you've swallowed that wine. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of feedback we get in the middle of the night when I get a text from someone that's still enjoying a bottle of Signature and had too much of it. And he sends me a text and they're explaining that finish, and it's exciting to us.
It's a good wine, especially with brownies.
Yeah.
I have brownies here, by the way.
Petit Syrah.
I know. So let's talk about your recipe. We got to get away from the brownies. That's bad news. I mean, it's bad when you arrive at a place and they're like, we just baked you brownies. And Nancy goes, can we have one before dinner? I said, no, Mom. And then the lady turns to me. She says, you're in my house. Your mother can have a brownie anytime she wants. I got nailed. So if your mother wants a brownie, you give her one. And she did have wine with it. Let's go to your recipe of the month, which is roasted vegetables with couscous, right? And couscous is healthy, nice and light. And you said that you can use chicken and shrimp with it. You can serve it hot or cold. It's a nice recipe. And everyone, the link for the recipe is in the show notes. And you'll also find it on blendradioandtv.com. But what are you pairing with this recipe? Because it seems light, you know, not too
heavy. It's very light.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's simple and it's very light. You know, how hard is it to roast some vegetables? Maybe you have some vegetables in your refrigerator that are hitting the end of their life, and toss them with some olive oil and or cut them into chunks, toss them with some olive oil, roast them up, put them in a bowl, sprinkle on some chickpeas and couscous and your favorite heated up broth over the top of it. I mean, how simple can that be?
And spice. You added some spice to it. We need to have a little bit of spice.
I everything I make has some red pepper flakes in it. It's the Italian in me. You can't, if it doesn't have fresh basil and oregano and red pepper flakes, I can't eat it. But I toss that in with some fresh lemons. Of course, lemons are coming into season in Arizona, and we need any recipe that calls for lemons. And so this one does. And, I talk about poaching if you're using chicken, poach it with the wine that you're going to be drinking. And so I suggest this with our Sky Island the Grenache. It would be wonderful. And because it's unoaked, I would choose an unoaked wine to poach in and then also drink with this. Or, our rosé of Grenache would be beautiful with this wine.
I would think that, and I also thought the Viognier for some reason.
Yeah, I think the Viognier would be good, but maybe not the Sky Island Viognier. It might, which is more Sauvignon Blanc. I might go with our Rhyolite Viognier potentially. That has a little a kiss of oak on it.
I love that you have the rosé too, because I think that Rosé, it took a while for rosé to, the education of rosé to come around in this country, because people would see a pink wine and think it was that thing from,
Right.
you know what I mean? You know that thing that you get at
Right.
the bottom shelf of the grocery store that you don't want. That's not necessarily good for you or your body, but I'm just saying. But rosé now it's out there, and I think it's spring is like such a good time to enjoy a good rosé and a nice dry one too. Just every,
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most people think rosé is a type of grape. They don't understand it as a winemaking style or a way of winemaking. And so, we're constantly educating people coming in, oh, I just love a sweet rosé. And it's like, okay, let me tell you about rosé. And our rosé looks like a red wine. I mean, it's a rosé of Grenache and it's a very beautiful color, but it's much darker than people are expecting.
It's delicious. So, Katie, what are you pairing with this from your wines?
I had two options, and one of which would be our rosé. We do savory rosé, so they're going to be bigger, bolder. And we did a Syrah Cab Franc rosé that has real nice depth of color. It's also great if you're going to go with the shrimp addition to the couscous because it's beautiful with seafood. I like that you get that balance of the cherry notes and a little bit of spice too from the blend. The other option would be we have a, I would say, medium to full bodied white that was our 21 vintage of the Malvasia Vignier blend. And again, there's a nice balance of some acidity in there. It's a great way to really bring out the balance out maybe the bitterness of some of the vegetables that you could get or brighten up some of the other flavors, but it's great with spice. So Peggy's tendency to go with the red pepper flake is beautiful with that Sauvignon.
I'm wanting some now. It's just, already there.
Yeah.
Brooke, on your side, tell us a little bit of what you would pair.
I think if we were going to go with chicken as the protein, maybe grill that with some lemon juice and olive oil, and then I make a orange style Malvasia that's aged in a 187-gallon concrete egg I have from France. So, like Peggy said, I wouldn't go with something with oak. Something clean and crisp. It's got notes of citrus in it. So I think that that would pair well. And I also think Grenache would be great too. The 22 Grenache I did in the egg as well, and it's kind of the egg allows a pure expression of the varietal without any oak impartation, and allows the wine to micro-oxidize down because the concrete is porous. And I think that that would be really fun addition with either seafood or chicken, and maybe some sprinkles of dried cranberry. I think that that would be a lot of fun.
Ooh, some dried cranberry in there too. That's very cool. Very tasty. I'm hungry
Very
now. I'm thirsty, and I still want brownies with all of this. Okay, just saying
good.
it's there. Oh, Kurt makes really good brownies. He does. He
Yes, he
does.
does.
He does. Well, listen, happy Women's Month to all three of you, and rock on, rack and roll. That's my new thing. That's what I'm going to
Rack and
say. I'll
roll. Yep.
rack and roll today. So, everyone, again, Peggy is on Big Blend Radio every first Wednesday for our Wine Time with Peggy show. You can keep up with her at ldvwinery.com, and also keep up with Katie. Go to her website, twistedunionwinecompany.com, and Brooks Winery, go to vinostash.com. And we'll have all those links in the show notes again, also with that recipe. So, thank you all for joining us here.
Thank
Thank
you so much.
you.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Katie.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio's Wine Time with Peggy show. Keep up with LDV Winery at ldvwinery.com. Keep up with Big Blend Radio at bigblendradio.com.